One of the reasons I wanted this to have this workshop is the fact that I've watched through the years and I've seen some people who may be pretty good at training individuals, but they really are lacking when it comes to the programming area, and that can get you in trouble. I know especially in the area where I am, where we have buildings, most state directors don't get real excited about having you're having a building and with right across the street from the campus and having five students around that you're discipling. There needs to be some programming, and regardless of where you are, let's face the fact that most people, most even of our leaders over us and other people a lot of times don't understand this thing of discipling. They really don't. They don't have much of a concept. What they do have a concept of is numbers. And I just know that as long as our numbers are up, I'm not likely to have any problems. But if the day came in which we had 10 coming to Vespers at Oklahoma University, I'd be in trouble. And I think one of the things we need to learn is something just about programming. So we're going to talk about a number of things tonight that relate to that and how we work with people and things. But let me just start out by saying a few things about that. When it comes to working with students, we're going to try to influence them towards the things that we feel important any way we can. We're going to do it as Bob has so well described for us tonight, what we do in a training relationship. But he said, also he tries to have really quality programs. I think our students, as much as it's possible for us, ought to know that any time we ever have a meeting, it's worth their coming to. And so wherever you are, do the very best you can. You may not have much money, but do the best you can so that when a student comes to your meeting, he feels like it's really worth his while. Now, that's why I like, if you come to the University of Oklahoma and Vesper starts at 6:30, we don't start at 6:35. Now, that may not be near as important in smaller situations, but we want students to know as much as is possible that we honor their time. And if you're going to come at 6:30, we're going to try to start at 6:30. We try to be through by 7:45. Now, we can't always control that. I mean, even at times I've spoken and gone over. But they know, basically, if they have to make an appointment with another student to work on a project or something, they can go to Vespers and they know that they'll be through somewhere around 7:45. You just help to set the standard for your ministry when you do that. And look around your area. You ought to know within a 150-mile radius of where you live, everybody that's really got anything to say. As far as people that can come in and speak. And that's one of the things I've tried to do in this area. And I'm always looking, are there new people? Are there certain areas we need to emphasize in our program? And is there someone within range of our budget and that type of thing that we can bring in? Now, if you have more money for programming, you can do more. But I'd also say this to you. You'll be amazed at the people that will help you and are willing to help you if you're really trying to do something. I know speakers that, this guy may get $500 for speaking. And we've had people to come. And if there are times that we cannot pay them, we'll let them know that. Now, I think another thing you don't want to develop in your ministry is a poor me. Everything's free. You come, you always do you're the one who's doing the sacrificing. So we try to treat people right. But look around your area. Who are the people in your area that really have something to say? And be careful in programming not to just use people to have good relationships with pastors. For example, if you don't have anything to say, if somebody doesn't have something to say, don't bring them. There are other ways you can cultivate relationships. Now, sometimes I know you have to take a chance on someone. There may be someone that you don't know. Like if a new pastor comes to our area, or something like that, and we don't know about his ability as far as speaking or something, we might use him when there's a smaller crowd. We might use him in the summer or something like that. But if you will develop the kind of relationship with your students that if you're going to ask them to come to a meeting, it's going to be worth their while. And try to do that with your large group meetings. Try to have those as well planned as you can, and try to have as good of a content as you can. Now, like maybe you're in a situation, you have very limited resources, but maybe once a month, like if you have a large group meeting, you might speak once a month. There may be once a month that you'd use a videotape or something like that. Once a month you would use a local pastor, and then once a month you'd find someone else. But I'm just trying to say to you, expose the people to the very best that you can, and also people who will reinforce what you're trying to do. If you're really trying to stress evangelism, someone else coming in who can say that, maybe they'll say basically what you will say, but they'd say it in a little different way. That can be very, very helpful. And so we try to bring in people as far as our main meetings that will emphasize very important things. And I try to find people who will get ready for what they're doing. Like when we have the staff that we have, these people will prepare for something. It's a good training situation. But you understand what I'm saying. Do the very best you can as far as having people have as high a quality program as you can with the finances you have and the resources in your area. Okay? And you want to do as good a job as you can just as far as the programming aspects. Now let me make another comment or two. You can get some things working for you. Like when I first came to University of Oklahoma, I looked around and I thought, now a student has a spring break for a week. I'd think long and hard if I were trying to disciple students on the campus and just let them go home for a spring break. If you're trying to disciple people, I find what I need is more time with them. I'm not able to get as much time with them as I would like to. And so I look for holes in their schedule. When is a student more available? Okay, spring break is a possibility. We found a week before school starts. We found now they're getting out so early that we can keep many of them a week after school's out. So we actually get 3 weeks with students that a lot in other programs might miss. We ask our leadership to come back a week early. If you're going to be on the ministry team, you come back a week early. That's a great time to do some things with them and help them to get their ministry off to a good start. Now, let me say something else here that relates to this programming and these doing special things that relates to finances. I know you may be in a situation where you have very limited finances. You do your students, I think, a great disservice if everything you do for them is free. Some churches, large churches in our area, they're able to take them off for a weekend, feed them, house them, and everything, and charge them $5. We can't do that very well, and I think they're doing a real disservice to the students if you consistently do that. When I first came to the University of Oklahoma and we decided on spring break to go to Colorado, to Glen Eyrie, I first mentioned it. I said, how about next spring? Let's go to Colorado during spring break. And the associate was there and said, and we began to talk about it, and how much was it going to cost? And it was going to cost $68 in 1968. That's what it was going to cost for them to go for a week, $68. And she said, Max, the students do not have that kind of money. I mean, there is no way you're going to get them to pay $68. So I go to this student. I say, could I ask you a question? Yes. Do you ever have a date? And he said, yeah. I said, have you ever spent $5 on a date? And he said, I mean, you know, you've picked the girl up, taking her to the movie, taking her out to eat. You've spent $5 on a date? And he said, yeah. He said, really, I've spent as much as $10 on a date. You can laugh about that now, but that's a lot of money, isn't it? I said, okay, now, but yet you think paying $68 to get a week's help in your Christian life is too much? Then your problem is not money, your problem is commitment. And so the first year, we said, okay, we can't sell the students. Most of them aren't at that point. So I will personally try to be responsible for one half of it. A student can go if he'll come up with $65 if he needs it. Now, I'm going to have an interview with every one of those students, because if his dad has a lot of money, we're not trying to get somebody else sacrificed to help him. And so we did that, and we prayed, and we had alums and people to help and to try to go. And I remember when we left, and Larry Woods can tell you more of the details of this, but we liked $35, having enough. And Brett and Bob and Larry and some of us used to meet every afternoon, or 3 afternoons a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, to pray in the money. When we left, we liked $35, having enough. We didn't have to pay for the bus till we got back. And so we went. And Larry Woods was thinking about, well, maybe we ought to just take up a collection and see if we could get it. And I said, no, we've prayed for $35. We've prayed. And let's don't do that. And I said, I wouldn't be surprised when we got back if we didn't have that in the mail. We walked into my office. We opened the mail. There's a check in, and I hand them to Larry Woods. One of them was for $20. Another one was for $15. Well, he's never forgotten that. God provided that. The next year, we let him pay $68. You know, last year we went, and it's $295. And that is if he didn't ski. And we only had 180 to go from OU. I don't say that boasting, but I mean that was it, from Norman. Now, the point is that over a period of time, you begin to help them to pay and to think what's important to them. And once that's happened, it's not that difficult. Now, every year we take students that don't have that much money, but we always say, here's what something costs. Now, if you cannot come, that's what we did for this conference. Here's what it costs. But if someone cannot come because they do not have the money, you let us know and we'll try to help you with that. But we don't just lower it. Some BSUs will say, well, we're going to lower everybody's $50. Well, you can lower somebody's $50 and he still can't come. But you lower $50 to one student, he could have paid it. But he won't now. So you've not helped yourself. So for retreats, conferences, things like that that have to do with money, we say, here's what it costs. Now, if you cannot go, you have a problem, you come, and then we'll pray. Students pray and help each other, I mean, every year before we leave on that trip. I mean, there are times before we leave on Saturday morning that on Monday we've needed $5,000 we didn't have to help students to go. And they pray, and it's amazing to see it come in. So I'm just saying that. And two, in your programming, sometimes you can get things that will build towards something. Like that conference is not real difficult to enlist students to go. Because for us, we've been going for years. It's been very helpful. And therefore, they tell others. And you can begin to build some good traditions. And so those are some things that might just help you, basically, as far as programming. And in your packet, you can see later, but there's just some forms that might be helpful. Like, here's a way we try to plan Vespers. You know, someone to line up the chairs, who's going to be the MC, all those types of things, so that they can actually plan it out. There's a Vesper planning sheet. There's also a sheet that's just for Vespers for each semester, like in the next few days. And sometimes we've been further along than we are this year. But I'll begin to think and pray about who do we want next year? What do we think we need to emphasize? We'll try to get the speaker, the topic. Here's a form for it being confirmed. If we want to put out a brochure on them, do we have a picture? Things like that. And one of the things that I found, it's better to do some things ahead of time. When I get into the semester, if I'm worried about who's going to speak on Vespers, on November the 9th, I'm in trouble. And before school ever starts, I know who's speaking in Vespers December the 9th. See? I already know that. Because I have gone into semesters in which Monday, I'm trying to meet with students, witness, do all that, and then wonder who's going to speak on Thursday night. That will absolutely kill you. Now, I just tell you, the Holy Spirit can lead ahead of time as well as He can. I mean, He can lead 6 months ahead as well as He can 3 months, 3 days ahead. and it sure takes a lot of pressure off. So as much as you can, like in the summer, at times when you can have more time, pray, think, what do you don't want to emphasize, what do you want to plan, who could you have speak? And I want to just say something. I was out recently out at USC with Neil Walker. He called Chuck Swindoll one day and asked him to come speak to BSU. Probably didn't have 30 cents in his bank account when he did it. But I mean, really, Chuck was very nice, returned his call and said, I'd love to come. Now, he couldn't, and it didn't work out. But I mean, I'm amazed. Like, sometime we'll have Elizabeth Elliott, and we've had people come. People say, wow, Elizabeth Elliott, how'd you get her to come? I said, we ask her. A lot of people are willing to help you. I mean, if you're in an area even where you have very little money, and yet you feel like the timing's right, it could be helpful. Like last year, Joe Todd called from up in South Dakota. He wants somebody to come up for a retreat. And I told him, Gloretta, I said, Todd, if you don't have the money and you need help, call us. So he called, and he said, Max, I can't even get anybody up there. And I said, well, I think we can. I called one of our alums. He flew, had a plane. He said, man, I'd love to do it. I'll take a man I'm trying to train. And he flew Ted up there. They did the retreat. The man paid for it. Pray. And there are people that will be willing to try to help you with some things. Okay? Yes, not putting things in letters as much. I send out a couple of letters a year right at the end. But, no? Well, let me tell you my thinking on that. When I first came, I was appalled at the hours they spent raising their summer missions offering. I mean, we had emphasis on it. They had car wash. One day, I hadn't been there very long, and associate said, Max, you need to go out on the porch and talk to Janann. Said she's out there crying. She was a mission chairman. And they'd gone around on cars and put little bags of dirt and said, you know, if you want this washed off of your car, you know, then Saturday bring it to BSU. And it had rained. Messed up her plans. I mean, God made it rain. She's sitting there crying, all upset with God because it rained. And I just used to drive me nuts about all year. Summer missions. You know, fundraising. Going doing this. Now, sometime God may lead you to do something just to build some unity. But we decided then, one year we had a cake sale. We thought we'll do it in a fun way. So I'm meeting with Bob and Brett and some of them, so we're having Bible study. And I said, now guys, you know, next Friday night, we're going to do this through a cake sale. We're not going to invite the non-Christians in, but just with our own kids, we're going to have the girls bake cakes and have a cake sale, and we'll do that for summer missions. Now remember, you decide what you're going to give. It's not a raffle type thing. We're not inviting that lost world in, but just it'll be a social, and we'll do that. And so we came to Bible study. Well, that day in noonday, in our noonday meeting, one of the guys had gotten up and he said, now we're going to have this cake sale Friday night. And said, y'all be sure and bring at least $2. So that afternoon, Brett and Bob and some of us are meeting for Bible study. And I said, guys, did y'all hear the announcement today about the cake sale Friday night? I said, yeah. I said, what did he say bring? I said, now, he said bring a certain amount of money at least. What did he say? Well, $2. And I said, guys, I think we ought to pray about what God wants us to give. And let's come to that with the idea. And I denounced that. Decide what God wants you to give and bring. And then he gets up and says, bring $2. I said, guys, I want to promise you one thing. When we come to that cake sale Friday night, the first one's not going to go for any $2. And I said, now you pray and decide what God wants you to do. So the guy gets up and starts the cake sale. He said, let's start the first one at $1. And here's Bob and Brett. $2, $3, $4, $5, $10, $15, $20. I mean, they just sat there. Their mouth just flew open. The first one sold for about $35. I mean, he was amazed, the guy that had made the announcement. And so they started the second one. Brett, Bob, me, these guys, we were bidding against 20, 25, 30, 30. And he just stood there. He couldn't believe it. And I said, could I have the mic for a minute? Or could I announce something? And I went up front and I said, you look dumbfounded. I said, I thought we were not just playing a silly game. I thought we were going to pray and see what God wanted us to give and do it in a fun way. I didn't think we were going to do, 50 cent stuff. Well, boy, it's just a hush. We sold every cake there, and then we had to take some of them and sell them again. I didn't get to spend my money. Well, we raised, I don't remember how much that night, but more than they'd probably given ever to summer mission is done in one night. Next day we did it in slave sale. By then I thought, the students have enough maturity now. We don't have to do that. So every year at Glen Eyrie, the last day, we bring one message on giving. You decide before God what you're going to give. Write it on 3x5 card what you'll do between now and next year. And we raise our summer missions offering in about 30 minutes. And we have had as much as $21,000 given. I think last year's a little over $12,000 pledged. And that's it. And we don't have to... if somebody wants me to give, tell me what it's for. Let me pray about it, and then I'll tell you. But I don't want to go... So that's what we do. There may be times that you would do things, but I think a lot of times to do things, if it unifies your students or something, fine. But use the time more for discipleship and evangelism and things, and then if you can get them in a spiritual setting where God's blessed them, and then do a message on giving and tell them what you want it for, I think is the best way I've found to raise money. Yes, we found, though, very little comes from that. It's just because of the atmosphere. But this year we got up at Vespers and said, hey, if you didn't go, and we added another $1,000 project to it and just told them, if you didn't have a part and you want to. And sometimes there may be a student that didn't. But, of course, we get the heart in most of our students that are really serious go on that trip. And so that's the heart. Uh-huh. We do that in the spring, and so those freshmen that are coming in, and the next year we do the same thing in the next year, but we usually do it in the spring. We have our own cooperative program. We will list. We're going to give so much to the state. Sometime we've done something for the retreat center there. Here's a student director out there. We want to send $100 a month. And we'll list these things and say, now the first money comes in, we'll do this, this, this. Now if we have enough, we're going to put some on the staff here and the retreat center, different things. So we'll usually have 5 or 6 things that we want to give to. We don't give it all just to the state summer mission fund. We give some to that, but there are other interests that we have apart from that. Okay?
We did a similar thing to that just this last spring ourselves, and with our... probably 15 to 20 students, we raised over $2,000 just out of them, averaging well over $100 a person.
Good. And usually when I will speak to the students, I may say, like at times, maybe it cost you $200 to come here. Some of you in the next year, you could give $200. You're going to be making some money this summer. And we let them be able to give it over a year period if need be. But this summer when you're working in times like that. So, okay? There's a form like this in your, just a simple calendar deal in your thing that you can Xerox. I would encourage you this summer just to get aside, spend some time thinking through your program. I'm going to be doing this with people, planning for individuals. But also when it comes to my group meetings, who can I have? What do I want to emphasize? What can I do? If you can plan ahead, you may want to do a little brochure. Now with computers, it's amazing what you can do at very little cost. Fact is, we'll have lying out here later tonight during the fellowship time. I've brought a bunch of the brochures that we've done at OU through the years, just to give you some idea. I'm not saying whether they're good or up to date. I'm just showing you what we've done in the way of advertising, something that we can go into the dorms, tell them about BSU, leave these, that type of thing. But nothing helps like getting your act together. I know one year by bringing our students back early, getting them back in, getting them moved into the dorm and starting visiting. I bumped into a fellow from Campus Crusade one time and he said, you know, I have not been to a single room yet that somebody from the BSU hadn't already been there. Now, we're not trying to compete, but we don't mind beating the other groups. Now, Crusade is not a cult, but there are cult groups on our campus. There are students out on that campus that may be hungry. And somebody come by and say, you want to be in a Bible study? Sure. Well, they may be from the Jehovah's Witnesses or the Mormons. And that's why if you can get your people back, have your program as well planned as you can, so that you can give yourself to visiting and going out and seeing people, getting after people, and you're not sitting down, you know, the last of August on the way back from Glorieta, riding in the car trying to figure out what you're going to do the first week. So get it done. Ask the people, decide what topics you want to cover. Do as much of that type thing in the summer as you can. Okay? Linda's going to talk with us some about how she plans for girls and some things like that that might be helpful.
Okay. My the two things that I'm really shooting for is, number one, to help the girls really get the great commandment in their life, to really be loving God, and so that when I know when they graduate, they really are going to walk with Him. And then also, that they are currently involved in the Great Commission, and that while they are on my team, they're learning to recognize their gifts and their strengths. So they may not really be good at what they're originally assigned to in ministry, but that they see areas they can develop in and that will really motivate them to be involved in the Great Commission the rest of their life. Most of the girls I get are juniors or seniors, and this year, every one of them, except for, I guess, one, was starting a Bible study. So, I try to think in the four areas of skill, vision, knowledge, and character. And what those girls really needed at that point was to know how to lead Bible studies. So I have a retreat early, really early in the semester, about the first couple weeks. And for those of you who work with girls, I'd really recommend that. I think it really builds unity and a support system, which girls especially need to have. It builds relationships, and it just comes together quicker for them. And I really pray that God will give a spirit of unity among the team so that there really is some transparency and sharing prayer requests, and there's some real support there, and they really are encouraged as they see God answering prayer in other people's lives. So what I'm doing is, for about the first 6 weeks, teaching them different skills in leading Bible studies. And usually during those 6 weeks, I will be giving them Bible studies that they can lead on the campus, so they're not trying to run around trying to figure out what Bible studies to use, but they have those ready to go. But then in the team meetings, they're learning specific skills. And what I'll do pretty quick in the semester is ask them to set 6 goals, and 2 in the area of character, 2 in the area of knowledge, and 2 in the area of skill. And I'll share with them my goals, 6 of my goals, and I try to be as transparent as I can with discernment. I don't want to share a goal with them that will too much for them. Like if I'm having trouble with, like if I was married and I wasn't liking my husband at that time, I wouldn't want to be sharing that. But if there are some things that I'm really struggling with, I go ahead and share those with them so they really will see a real life. And then I want to give them another, some things, just have ideas where they can choose from. This blue sheet was in your packet. I have not used this. I've used something similar to it. It's from Gene Ward's book on You Can Make Disciples, and it goes over vision and the ministry skills and character. In his book, it's a rating system, and I wouldn't ask the girls to rate it, but what I would do is say, now, what I want you to do is think through your life. Think through the summer, maybe last spring. What did you see the Holy Spirit start to do in your life? What are the areas He's working on? And they may have no idea. So something like this will really give them some ideas of things to pick from. And I tell them, you know, you're not gonna have all these qualities, you're not supposed to, but this may give you an idea of where to start. I wanted to add three different ones for girls especially. One is a quiet spirit. One is gratefulness. And then one would be relating to authority. And then I don't think he has lordship on here. So they set those in the group and share them with the group, and the group tries to pray for at least one of those qualities for each of the girls. Then I'll get with them on an individual basis and say, hey, what did you mean when you made these goals? One girl, one semester, her goals were obedience, understanding her temperament, understanding herself, or developing a healthy self-image, having an eternal perspective, developing her quiet time, and sharing her testimony. And so I go through all six of those and try to figure out exactly what she meant, what she would like to see happen in the next few months of her life. And, you know, if she shares stuff that I think... Do you have a question? Okay. That, you know, I think this is not really what you're dealing with. Then I'll just try to, you know, talk it through with her and really try to spend some time. And I'll go ahead and take that and work with it. But the next week I'll get alone with the Lord, and I try to one day every 1 or 2 weeks try to spend time with God praying and planning for each girl, trying to make observation in her life. Where is she? Where does she need to go? What is going on in the planning, in the program? Are there conferences in the area that this particular girl would be helped by? And try to encourage them to go to that. Try to develop some projects for her. There's some helps in that, some resources in the back of the book under discipleship, and then also some of the stuff that Harold presented on how to work in character quality. So I get with the girl, and with girls you need to let them talk. And so I just try to, you know, let them, for the first few minutes, maybe 15 minutes or so, getting together with them, just try to figure out what's going on in their life, or just go have fun with them, do something fun, go shopping with them. But try to communicate. You are more important than me meeting with you or me doing my goals or whatever. But just try to be developing a relationship with them. And a lot of times in that time, I can find out, you know, where they really are, what's really going on in their life. And as I am transparent with them individually or in the team meeting, they'll go ahead and really share what's going on in their life. So as we're talking, things may come up that what they need to deal with, and it's not their goals. Like, I look especially for moral impurity or bitterness or temporal values. And I had a girl that had all these great goals set up, but I knew her family background, and I knew that there were a lot of problems she was going to deal with and that she was currently dealing with because of that. But she had no idea that any of that had ever affected her life, and she really wasn't open to it. So I kept going with her goals, but I made sure she went to a conference that I thought would help bring some of those things to the surface, and just prayed for God to, when it was time for me to start bringing it up, that God would show me. It took about a year, but after that time, she was really open to get help. Also, we had a girl in our ministry whose mom died when she was very, very young, and her dad just was not able to compensate for that loss. And I knew that she had a lot of gaps because of that. So I encouraged her to get time with one of the staff wives. I said, just go ask her if you can spend one night a week helping her cook dinner and then eat dinner with them. And I knew the staff wife, and I knew that would be fine, but with her. But she got some cooking skills. She still wasn't a great chef, but she had a little bit more confidence that I might be able to do this. And then also she saw a healthy family relate. She saw the husband and wife related, how they discipline their kids. Another girl really loved God and really wanted to do evangelism, but she didn't have any friendships at all. And so I just, you know, she had her goals, but I just kind of went out and got a Coke with her every week and tried to be real transparent where I was. And then as I built that, she began to open up to me and felt like we really developed a friendship. One of the things I wanted to say about that Max said was Max does not use students. I've just been amazed at the times when Max could have looked good in front of people. He could have gotten a lot of students there. And I know he could have because I've seen him get a lot of students to some place. But he chose not to do that. And the reason he does that is to not use them. And that's been a real example to me that what is going to help these students the best and what do we want to go after them for? I try to, in the small group team meeting, try to do some case study in the areas of building a support system, really helping them learn how to honor each other, helping them learn how to build each other up, and then in different areas like prayer, having non-Christians over. Kevin, did you have a question? Okay, on the, this probably wasn't the best thing for me to choose because I don't even ask them to do goals in the area of vision. I try to do that on my own as I'm thinking through what to expose them to. Grasp, like, what follow-up is. Now, I would put that, you know, as an option to do. Just some things that I feel like they could handle. The authority of the Bible, that might be something that I would list. But I would probably cross some of these off for that particular group. Yes, there. It depends on the year. Last year there were 10, and then it dropped to 8, and this next year will be 12. What do I do at the retreat? We'll come out here. We'll probably come for dinner, and I'll cook dinner. And we eat almost every week together, eat a dinner in my home, just because I think just the fun time around the table really builds unity. But we'll come out here and eat, and if there's some girls this year, they're worried they've never led Bible studies, I ask the girls who've never led Bible studies to come out. The other girls can come out a little later. And I go over I just do the first week's Bible study for them. And then if they have questions, we can interact with that. Then if they have particular questions about the Bible study, that's a time where they can really ask. This year will be a little different because I have some girls who've been very good at leading small groups on my team, and I'm going to have them teach that. Then we'll have dinner. Then usually what I'll do is... what I did last year was I just had some fun mixers. We'd been together maybe one other meeting at this time, so we didn't have a group sense at all. Did some mixers, came down here, played some water balloon volleyball and did some stuff like that. And we just went around and we shared our testimony. And I went first, and there are a couple of girls who had some real traumatic things that happened in their life, and I asked them if they'd be pretty transparent with those things. They were immature enough to do that. So it was a pretty heavy time. But I felt like with that group we could do that, and it really solidified. We talked about what qualities we wanted in our ministry team. Like we wanted to be a team that was really reaching out to other people, praying for each other. We talked through some of those things. That was all we did that night. We spent the night. And then we had breakfast together and we came in for church. So. Neil? Uh-huh. Right. Uh-huh. And what I'll try to do this year is I'll still do it Saturday night because of the calendaring of the school, but I probably will ask them to come back after church Sunday lunch and have lunch together and do a few more things together. I do it real early in the semester, so it really is not interfering too much with their school. There may be one, we meet on Friday night's ministry team. There may be one Friday night ministry team between the two. But I try to do it almost immediately. And I'll write them a letter this summer and tell them that this is something they need to schedule for. So I expect them to be there. And they have been. Martha? Before the actual first Bible study, the week before that, what they'll do is kind of have a party, kind of get to know you, who wants to be involved in the Bible study, where are we going to meet. So it's kind of between the party and the first Bible study. So they've got people who are ready to go into the Bible study, but they haven't actually had one. And if I do it any farther or any earlier than that, they are panicked about leading the Bible study. And they're panicked about meeting people. And what they don't need is, right when they're getting ready to meet people, is that they need the Bible study right before they're going to lead it, because they're too panicked about other stuff. Does that make sense? So I do it right before then, and then every week I give them the Bible study for a few weeks until I feel like they're ready to take their own study, take a study and develop it for themselves, or to make their own study. Right. Yeah, see, like next... My Bible study probably starts later than other people, probably the second week of school. So what they do is at the retreat, they go out during the when the dorms first open, they're knocking on doors and meeting people. Like if you have Walker 5, you're out there knocking on doors that first week, meeting people, getting to know them, helping them move in, and then you tell them right off, you know, we're interested in starting a Bible study, and we're going to have a Bible study party this time. Karen? Right, and most people have been involved in one of those studies, those parties, so they kind of know how to do it. Andy?
Let me make a comment about that, Martha. This may help. See, that's one of the reasons we have them come back early. They come back. See, the freshmen arrive on campus. They're there the week before school starts. They open the dorms on Wednesday. We have our students come back. The ones that live in there, they come back. And where they live in the dorms or not, they come back a week early. We have the retreat Monday night, Tuesday, Wednesday noon we turn loose. They open the dorms. They begin to move in. Get your stuff in. You know where your assignment is because they've known that since last spring. We try to have them to know that before they leave. So like Linda said, here's a girl. She has a fifth floor walker. She immediately goes to the fifth floor walker and starts meeting girls. Now, ideally, we like for them to live on that floor if possible. She walks up to me. She's already got and introduces me to 5 girls that are going to be in her Bible study, and they're starting Tuesday night. The reason they're not starting on Monday night is because we're having another party on Monday night to try to get some of the classmen and people that we missed on Friday night. So it's not all victory, but I am saying that we try to get those started very early. And if you get your leadership back, when they come back that week early, we have a list. Where's everybody live? What's your phone number? Those that know it. So that if I bump into someone and he lives on the 7th floor, I may bump into him over in the bookstore. I say, where you live? Some, well, he lives on the 7th floor. Oh, have you met Phil Ernest? He's going to be leading a Bible study there. By the way, he's in room so-and-so. I can get their room. I can go to Phil. I meet someone at church on the first Sunday, and I can say, have you been invited to be in a Bible study? Well, no. Well, I have that little sheet with me in our notebook. Everyone on the team has that with the phone numbers. So we meet someone at church, and I can say, where do you live? And they say, well, I live over in Kate Center. And I can say, well, have you met so-and-so? And I can go to that person and say, I met this person at Sunday school. Here's her room number. Here or wherever I met them. And would you contact them? And so that's why we try to get them back early and visit as early as possible. Now, I'm aware that in some situations you can't do that. And literally, I've had some fellows on my team that just couldn't get it together before 3 or 4 weeks into the school. But normally, the quicker you can get it, because, see, you're going to meet on Tuesday night at 7 over a period of time or 9 o'clock or whenever, they fall into patterns. Now, we try to have our Bible studies either early or late, not usually 8 o'clock. See, because that kills the evening. Right after dinner or later that night, like some of them eat at 10 or 9:30 or something like that. Let me tell you something that literally happened. And I'm not trying to say this as far as impress you with numbers. But I'm just going to tell you because it relates to what I'm saying. By bringing our students back, we have had as many as 1,078 students over to BSU by the end of the first day of class. We had 788 out in the on, and we set up tables around where you can't get in to where the meeting is or pizza without you have to walk by there, which means you've got to sign a card. We bring ladies over this, get on the computers. Now we have computers. Used to be typewriters. We'd have a number of typewriters set up in there, ladies in there typing. And we get those names. That year we had 500 brand new names of new people. The next year we had to go to Glorieta. The latest, we had to start on Wednesday instead of Monday. If you do not get your act, I'd say whatever you do, get your act together and get your leadership back early. And see, if they know now, if you wait and write them a letter in August, say, can you come back a week early? You're going to have parents that hate you. But if they know in May, we say, now, school starts on a certain date. We want to start a week early. So when they go home, mom says, when you need to be back? I need to be back on so-and-so. And then there's not a problem with parents. Now, occasionally we have that. But when they know in May, they can tell their parents when they first get home, no problem usually. But you wait till August, and mom says, you know, she wants you home. So that's important. Now, let me say another thing, then I want to give it to these others. Help your students to think ministry. I'm amazed at the people in ministries that just let their students just live anywhere and they never ask. We, because we're on a campus with, say, maybe 4,000 that live in the dorm. There are 20,000 on campus, only 4,000 live in the dorm. We still concentrate on the dorm because that's where the freshmen are. Doesn't mean that we don't reach some others, but that's where you concentrate. And we ask those students to consider living in the dorms. And that we say to people, and I'll just say this to you, any student will double his ministry if he'll live in the dorms. You will absolutely double your ministry. You don't have to be any more spiritual, don't have to pray another minute, memorize another verse, and you'll double your ministry if you live in the dorm. Now, sometimes, folks, you don't have all that much ministry, and it needs to be doubled to amount to very much. And I'm just saying that if you can, I know sometimes students live at home, and that's fine. Don't make them feel guilty. Sometimes maybe a student cannot. But we have students, and it costs more to live in a dorm than it does an apartment, or at least they think it does. And it probably does in some situations. And we try to help them to think. Like, for example, in Walker Tower, 10 stories tall or so, we get the students thinking about, all right, who's going to be living on the 7th floor? Maybe here's a couple of fellas. Or who's going to be living on the 8th floor? And we even get them scattering out. And not only that, but they ask a number of them, like on this floor, maybe there are 75 students about on that floor, on one wing, on that floor. So they ask for the room right next to the elevator. Why? Because if anybody goes down at all, you got to walk by that room. So when they're moving in, a lot of them, they'll buy a big Coke, big Dr. Pepper, and some chips, leave their door open. When people are moving in, somebody goes down the hall, they say, hey, I want to meet you. Meet them, come in, have a Coke. Well, who's the most popular guy on the floor, other things being equal? That guy. And they live right there. And anytime, if they're in their room, they don't have to study, leave the door open. What if you live in the last room down in the hall? Everybody can come in and you don't know it. This way, nobody walks down that hall but what you know it. And so we encourage the students to live in the dorms. We encourage them to, and this year, I guess, sir, we were talking about this, that rooms like that, there would be 40. And I would imagine the BSU have at least 20 of those rooms out of the 40 that are like that. because they plan on it. And you need to do that. And we realized this year we made a mistake in not talking to some of them early enough, because a lot of them along about March, even February, they're deciding who they're going to live with, or let's get an apartment. If you can, challenge them to think ministry. Living in the dorms, when it comes time to go eat, you can study, you can go eat. We encourage them. Now, this doesn't always happen, but we encourage them. At least eat one meal a day with a lost person, somebody on your floor. And living on that floor, we give the person who lives on the floor the first preference. If somebody says, I want to lead a Bible study on the fifth floor of Walker, we say, do you live there? If somebody else would like to lead a Bible study and lives on that floor, we say, well, so-and-so will be leading the Bible study. Because you've got a far greater opportunity to influence them. Get the students thinking. Also, we encourage them to live in the dorm where freshmen are. There's another area where a lot of upperclassmen live, but more freshmen live in Walker. Well, the amazing thing is most of the upperclassmen don't want to live there. So who do we live over there? The upper-class BSU, you kids. And that way, it really helps. And then when it comes time for the party, they round them up, Vespers, things like that. You can go down the hall and say, hey, I'm going to Vespers, I'm going to BSU. You want to go with me? And help them to begin to think about their ministry.
Okay, so the question is, what am I trying to do at the Bible study party? Okay, what they've done is they've already gone around to the different rooms, and people have said if they're interested or not. They set up signs what time the Bible study party is. And what they'll do during the time is we tell them to bring some kind of refreshments, and they'll play some kind of mixer game or something to get to know each other. One thing they've done that's a lot of fun is saying two truths and a lie. Everybody has to guess which one is the lie. Or sometimes I'll just go around and, you pick so many M&Ms up, and then however many M&Ms you pick up, you have to say that many things about you. They'll eat refreshments, and then they'll talk about what kind of Bible study would you like, where can we meet, what time do you want to have it, what day is best. So it's more of a get-to-know-you party. A lot of people come that don't end up coming to the Bible study, especially if it's in the lobby, because the lobby will catch a lot of people who are just passing through. But at least they'll be aware of the Bible study and some of the people who are going to be in it. Try to make sure that the leader, unless they don't want anybody else there, has somebody else who's pretty committed in the BSU, another Bible study leader or an assistant, or I'll go if they want me to go to be there. So that person's not alone. That kind of helps, get talking going and stuff like that.
Bozeman, Montana is about a couple thousand miles from Norman, Oklahoma in more ways than one. It kind of reminds me we're Mike said 150 mile circle. That includes mostly farm country, and neither is this on. we exhausted our supply of available speakers a long time ago. One time when I was traveling, we're so far from things, when I have to go anyplace, it takes a long time to get there. And I stopped in Rapid City to spend some time with Joe and Corrine at their house. And it was a couple years ago, we had my 2-year-old son with us. And they have a really small house. It's so small that we were going to sleep on their... They had a fold-out couch bed and everything. And when you folded it out, it was up against one wall in the living room. When you folded it out, it touched the TV on the other side of the wall. And we were laying there in bed. My wife, Neil, my 2-year-old, he was between us, and myself. And my feet were kind of touching the TV. Well, I fell asleep in that condition. And in the middle of the night, I stretched, and my foot reached out and pushed the on button to the TV. And it blared away. Their cat, which sleeps on top of the TV, was scared to death, ran across the bed, woke up my son, who was screaming his head off, jumped over the back of the couch, knocked the lamp over. And I sit up in bed, and I go, what in the world is going on? That reminded me of my whole first year on campus in Bozeman. You know, there are some guys who might have been able to grab the lamp, turn it on, shut the TV off, and calm the kid, punt the cat, explain everything to their wife, and be back asleep in 30 seconds. But that wasn't me. I'm kind of just a persistent plotter. I first have to figure out what's going on. And it took me a full year just to figure out what was going on. Max was talking about planning, and I know that first year, more often than not, I was driving to campus to do our Thursday night thing, and I didn't have a clue what we were going to do. I was making it up as I went, because when I was finally hired there, you know, they hired me and told me I should have been there 3 weeks ago. And I didn't have any time to plan anything. So my whole first year was an emotional trauma. Without planning, there's just chaos. It really was. And I'm surprised my wife survived me that first year. You know, the story of the tortoise and the hare, the tortoise is kind of my hero and role model for ministry. He just goes and goes and goes. It's not flashy. It's not real outlandish or, you know, rockets and red glare and all that kind of stuff. But we just go and we take things one step at a time. My son was memorizing something. We were trying to work some character qualities into his life, and we talked about planning with him. I don't know why we're trying to teach a four-year-old how to plan. But, you know, he learned that planning is taking one step at a time to do a job right. And that's really helped me a lot, taking one step at a time to do a job right. I have a vision for what I want our BSU to be. But I can't do it all this week or this year or whatever. I'm going to take one step at a time and try to do it right. I think there are a couple of important elements in planning any ministry. And they're nothing brand new necessarily, but the first thing is training. You need to know something. Sometimes, I guess one of the things that bothers me about it is sometimes you get guys who spend their whole life training and never ministering. That's a problem with it. And at some point, you just got to get out and do it, because all the training and all the manuals and all the workshops and all the programs aren't going to get ministry done. You just got to decide at some point, I've had all the training I'm going to get for right now, and get out there, because I learned a whole lot. You know, I had my seminary degree. I'd grown up in the BSU at Iowa State. I'd heard Max talk 100 times. And, you know, I had a lot of input. But when in the profusion of confusion of that first year, I didn't get anything done. All the training didn't really, it probably saw me through more than I realized. But I was just faking it. And that was the best classroom I had, just learning the ins and outs, the ropes, and that sort of thing. Training, get some. The next thing is resources, and Max also touched on that. I think success in ministry, I've had to come to this. You know, you think a successful ministry is one that reaches a lot of people and all those things, and it does. But for me, I've had to redefine it somewhat. Just to help me feel successful, I guess. But a successful ministry is one that does the best job possible with the resources you have. I figured it out. You know, if I had a $100,000 budget, I could pay every student $25 a night to come to my BSU, and I'd have 100 a week. But I don't have a $100,000 budget. Money is one of the resources that you have to take into consideration. Obviously, faith is involved in praying and planning, and don't dream too little, but also realize the limitations that finances will have. You also have yourself. I'm not Max Barnett. I'm not Jack Owens. I'm not Harold Bullock. I'm Chris McCray. And there are a lot of guys who could go to Bozeman, Montana, and do a better job there than I'm doing. But they ain't there. You know? They're not there. I'm there. And the BSU in Bozeman, without me, wouldn't be there. Well, it may be. but it wouldn't be the same thing. And so I am there. You are where you're at. And you're the best person for that job. You have limited skills. You have limited resources. You have limited talents. But whatever God has given you, He's given you, so make the most of it. And I guess what I'd like to say with that is pretty much we have to stop complaining about it. You know, I can come here and complain that I don't have a $100,000 budget, you know, so I can't do the things they're doing. I don't have, how many Baptist students you got on this campus? It's more than we have. When I think Louis was talking about the three groups of Baptist students that he has, I think we have three Baptist students. So, you know, I can complain about that, or I can just deal with the fact that there aren't Baptist students who aren't, they're not going to come just because I put up a BSU poster. They might think it's Black Student Union or something, I don't know. But they're not going to think Baptist, that's for sure. So make the most of the resources you have and don't complain about the ones you don't have. Just analyze where you're at and go to it. Another one is the situation. This is one of your resources. And what I'd like to say there is each campus is unique. You know, students are in some ways are the same everywhere. Montana's kind of 20 years behind. You know, I've kind of been here and I've watched these guys. They're all dressed up and they have their belts hanging out about 6 inches. You know, we don't do that in Montana yet. I don't know if it's a fad that's coming or what. But we're just kind of behind times. Even within Montana, Norman's at the University of Montana, and our campuses are really different. They had a basketball game that was being televised nationally, and it was at the height of the Persian Gulf crisis, and they had a sit-in on center court that they had to be dragged off by the police and everything. That same night on my campus, we had one of our dorms lit up with red, white, and blue in the form of an American flag. You know, there's just great differences on campuses, and you have to know your campus in order to minister there. Ours is a far more conservative campus. His is a much more liberal campus. What situation do you have there? I guess figure out what you can and you can't do with the resources you have and live with them. And that goes back to not complaining. But, again, touching on what Max said, do whatever you do with excellence. There's one of my pet peeves is getting a mimeograph piece of paper that's all wrinkled and faded and you know, it's got black streak marks on it and you can barely read the writing. And this is kind of the thing that identifies you to the campus. I mean, you might as well throw it in the garbage. If that's what you're going to do, don't do it because it's going to present a negative image of who you are. Even if you don't have the money for a computer, you could have somebody type it for you. I know in our student union building, there's a print shop that will take any disk from that has WordPerfect 5.1 and give you a laser printed copy for 75 cents. You know, and that looks sharp. So find somebody with a computer, type it up with WordPerfect and take it to a print shop. And it's not expensive to do it well. It just is laziness, in my opinion, that keeps things from being done well. I was talking with somebody the other night and we were talking about music, and he said if he believed that if you couldn't do music well, you ought not to do music. And that's a hard thing, but then I thought back to the time when I was in a small group. Well, we called it a small group. It was bigger than my large group. But we didn't have any musicians. And we didn't have any music. But we had good relationships, and people got along, and they talked, and there was good interaction, good fellowship. There's almost nothing programmatically that is essential. There are some things that are nice, but they're not essential. If you can't do it well, don't do it. Fourth element, I'd say, is just plan. We do need to pray about our ministry, but as Max said, and this is something that I've been thinking about a whole lot this week, you know, people talk about getting in on what God's doing, and we ought to be doing that. But God is a God who plans. And if He's got something in mind for my campus this fall, I can talk to Him about it now. I don't have to wait till I get there and fly by the seat of my pants and be stressed every week. If He has something in mind for MSU this fall, I need to have been praying about that since January. And so right now, we've got our, as far as planning goes, we've got our entire calendar for next school year planned out. Now, it's not set in concrete, and we will negotiate and change some things as the year goes along. I know the topic. Like I said, we don't have to worry about speakers. I'm the speaker. But I know the topic for every Thursday night meeting for the entire school year. It's already taken care of, and I don't have to sweat it. I still have to plan them, but at least I've got a title for it. And those sorts of things, I think, will relieve you from a lot of stress in ministry. Just being able to think through and plan, and you'll spend less time planning if you do that than if you're just kind of winging it. And finally, that you need to evaluate what's going on. There's sort of, when I evaluate, I start with the presumption that there aren't any sacred cows. You know, there's nothing that is not expendable. When we got together for our planning retreat a couple of weeks ago, I took our ministry team on a retreat, and we started out and said, okay, everything's at zero. We're not going to do anything next year. That's our base starting point. What do we think God wants us to do? Just because we did it last year doesn't mean we're going to do it this year. We don't have to meet every week. We don't have to meet every month. We don't have to have any large group activities. I don't have to speak. It's all negotiable. Because what we're concerned with about it is effectiveness in ministry for Jesus Christ and building His kingdom. It's not a big deal whether I do anything or we do something the way we did it last year or we heard at some great conference that we should try to do something. You before God and with your team and everything else just need to establish what it is that you're going to do. And some things, you know, we even threw out some things that worked great. They worked wonderful last year, and we're not going to do them next year. With just a little brainstorming, you can probably come up with 100 or 150 different good things to do every year. But our resources are limited in people, in money, and other thing else. So, and not to mention time. We'd have to do 4 different things, big things every week. And that just won't work. So you throw some things out, you add some new things, and you try a few things. One thing I'm kind of excited we're going to try this next fall that we've never done before is that we're going to send letters to all the high school students in the state and invite them to come to our campus. And we're going to put on a weekend for them. I don't know how many will come, but we're just going to do that. Last thing. I guess everything, like I said, there aren't any sacred cows, but every year I try to do a little bit better job. You know, that first year was kind of a mess. But if I lived that way every year, I would have been out of the ministry a long time ago. Because I wasn't that effective or productive for God's kingdom. But I try to do a little bit more every year. It's the old tortoise story. I'm not going to be the flash in a pan, but I hope and pray that 20 years from now, I'll still be having an effective ministry that's growing and doing different things. And more people are being reached for the kingdom of God.
Let me make a comment, and then I'll have Linda and Chris, if you like. Well, there have been times that we worked up studies and said, let's, one year we tried everyone to do the same study. We found that didn't work. Because when a person takes the floor of the dorm, goes out and visits, you never know. When you say whosoever will may come, they might. And you don't know what you're going to get. Or they might not. Some of those studies may be all Christians. Some of them are maybe part Christian, part non-Christian. Some may be all non-Christian. You never know. It will even vary on the floors. And I've found, when I've said, I'm going to do this week, this, and I got to the point I thought, now, boy, when we get to this study, they're going to really be excited about it. But when he did, they weren't, and I had to change. And so, as a student gets, I know some of the fellows on my team, I let them select what they want to do. Some of them are very creative, and one fellow, I think, in particular, does an excellent job with a Bible study. He usually has about 9 students in his Bible study or so. He does a very good job with it, and he comes up with what he wants to do. And he does it. He's very creative, does an excellent job. Sometimes, though, you know, we do suggest, why don't you try this, or here's something that you could use for a semester, like the Serendipity Bible back here that has some excellent studies. We've done many, many different types of things, but especially if a person's led a Bible study year or so, they want to do, a lot of times they're the kind. Now, some are. Others had rather put something in their hand, and I'll let Linda share what she does with the girls.
Basically, I wouldn't add a lot to that except that the Bible study I do give the girls to lead for the first 4 weeks is on a self-image. And I don't know, one of the girls put it together one year, and it was really good, and the girls really liked it, so that's just something I make available to them. We have one of Dave's guys wrote a Bible study, probably, I guess, 16 weeks on the character of God, and they take a different characteristic every week. And some of the girls use that after the month is done. But usually after about a month, the girls know a little bit where their girls are, and we just spend some time thinking through and praying through what are some felt needs they'll have, go down to the bookstore and look through things.
I was just going to say that we, for 4 years, we busted our tails to start Bible studies, and I had my best guy, my sharpest guy, and we did everything right. And week after week, nobody showed up. And so last year, we didn't do Bible studies. We're going to try it again next year. That's about it, you know. Again, it's just your individual campus.
I don't have specific breakpoints. I thought of doing that. We do have, like, sometimes we'll do a series for 3 weeks and then have a fun night out, and then do a series for 3 weeks and have a fun night out. But I've never known of anybody to say, you know, we're going to start a new series, you're free to come or whatever.
You know, a lot of that I read, people are, it's better to have short-term commitments. But we've found usually, like Linda says, maybe they'll take a break. And we encourage them sometime maybe to do something different. You know, they may come, and I know sometimes I've gone out when I was leading a Bible study with some of the athletes, and, you know, I'd show up with ice cream, and we'd, you know, maybe do something different. You want to keep the morale up if you can. That's very important, and fun is very important to morale. If you can do some fun things occasionally, it really does have to keep the morale up. Another thing that keeps morale up for a large group is knowing what's going on. I had a Marine sergeant live next door to me, and one time a group of guys I was meeting, we've noticed something about the Marines. You can take one of the sorriest thugs off the street, put him in the Marines. I mean, 2 months later, usually, I mean, he is so excited about the Marines. I mean, why is that? And so we did a study, and the guys went over there and interviewed him and went down to one of the drills one weekend, just spend some time with him, just to learn. And he said, we found in the Marines that the thing that is the biggest killer of morale is when people don't know what's going on. And so keeping people informed such that they know there's good communication is very important. Well, one of the big things that we try to do is, you know, the spring break trip. That's a big thing for us. It takes some effort, time, and it's kind of a morale builder. I think students that go on that, it's a real encouraging time. There may be more of those than we're sensitive to. And let me just say this. You know, I appreciate what Chris said. You have to decide where you are and what you can do where you are. And we have a lot of advantages, you know, like the type school where we are that other people don't have. And we don't do a very good job in a lot of areas. I mean, we really don't. And it is a matter of evaluation. Like next week, we get through this, we're going to meet from 1 to 4, one a day as a staff, and another day from 10 to 3. And I tell you, we spend, I don't think this is an exaggeration. In a year's time, we will spend, I don't know, but I'm going to say dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of hours together as a staff, thinking, praying, evaluating. one of the reasons I was going to go ahead and try to get started on Vespers, and we thought, before we do that, we just need to evaluate it. And I know sometimes our staff, we get some of those staff meetings aren't all that exciting because we talk and we talk. Well, what about this? What about that? Should we do this? Should we do that? There's a lot of evaluation that goes on. And I don't know any other. I've never found any shortcuts. And not only is it necessary, and those of you that don't have larger staff, you know, you can think, boy, if I just had a bigger staff. If you had a secretary, well, you got to keep something for her to do, you know, too, and things like that. But with a larger staff, the communication thing and being together, it's not all easy just because you have a larger staff. Like there are times, sometimes I might think, now, here's what I think we ought to do. But if I just roar off, I'll find myself out there by myself. Not that the staff's not supportive, but they don't know. They don't know what the thinking is. So we may come in and hassle it around for an hour to come out where I could have told us an hour ago what I thought we ought to do. But although that's true, there's a lot of times that I'll have an idea and I think, man, I think this is terrific. And I come in and we're there and I notice Linda's real quiet, you know, doesn't say a whole lot. And I said, Linda, what do you think? I don't think it'll work. And somebody else doesn't think it'll work, and they don't think it'll work. And one thing that it'll help you so much in ministry, if you learn the difference between commitment and just your ideas. See, they're not. When I come up with one of these ideas and the staff concludes it won't work, they're not questioning my commitment. They're not saying, Max, you're just not committed. They're just saying that's a dumb idea. And see, you've got to learn that, because sometimes somebody question you, and you think, well, now I'm the spirit, you know, well, no, it just wasn't a good idea. And I'm telling you, that happens, and you need that, and you need feedback from your students, and we're finding more and more there's a danger when you have a bigger staff that we talk a lot. And it's easier not to get enough feedback, so we're trying to get more and more feedback. And one of the big things this day, it's so important for your students, get feedback, let them tell you what they think.
Just one other thing I wanted to add to that question was, especially for the people that are under you that are trying to have a ministry, I try to capitalize on any kind of holidays, like have whether you agree with this or not, Halloween parties, doing something big at Christmas, having people over, Valentine's Day, just using any holiday to get, especially the people who are trying to do ministry in the dorms, to do that.
See, another thing, we try to let the students go home for Christmas. We think that's a very important time. Even though they're out for a month, it doesn't work real well for us to bring them back to something. And so we'll ask them for their spring break and then let them have their Christmas break. Well, it does take I don't know as I can say. I'm not the best organized person. You can ask the staff. I mean, I'm one that kind of wakes up and, I mean, I'm not the best planner. I'm sure not cleric. But it takes a great deal of time. And a lot of that time in the morning, I get up, I have my quiet time. I get some ideas there a lot of time and thinking. I have to give quite a bit of time to administration. I mean, I don't like it, but I just do. When it comes to budget, pastors, there's not anybody on our staff could tell you what our budget is. Probably. I don't bother them with that. I mean, a lot of it, I mean, there are just certain things that I need to take off and free them up more to minister. And so I do spend considerable time, and then like we have a 3-hour staff meeting every week. I try to get some time with the staff. When I'm doing, I don't always do this, but there are times that I will spend one day a week and do nothing but staff. When I would meet with the staff, and then after that I'd spend 30 minutes with each one of them. I mean, one whole day, nothing but staff. But that's important because they're out there functioning. They're doing a lot of things. But I would give considerable time, probably in a day's time, administration or something like that, maybe 3 hours even in a day, something like that. Well, we think through it by sections. Like, for example, and we break some things down. Like, I basically do Vespers. I get the speakers, and I may come and say, is there anyone that y'all think, staff-wise, that we especially ought to have or certain emphasis for next year? But then I basically do that. But Linda usually lines up the coordinators and the MCs. So I can say, Linda, could you do that? She does that, and then she'll come back and say, here's who I'm thinking about. And then we will talk. When it comes to that fall retreat, what we do during that 2.5 days, Dave Edwards may do that. Our summer training programs, different things, different ones of them will plan them. So we have certain areas. But then we may come and say, all right, let's evaluate freshman ministry team. The whoever's leading, what did you think about it? How many students did we have? What do you think went well? What didn't? And we think through that. Like this year, it concerned us. Why do students come to Vespers on Thursday night at times when we have some, we feel like, some excellent input, and they didn't invite anybody? I mean, what's the deal? And we thought, well, maybe, are they getting too much input? Or what's the deal? And so that's why we wanted to evaluate it. We're learning more and more that students want to participate more than just be talked to one more time. And when we think they're in a Bible study, they come to Vespers, they come to Sunday school, they come to church, I think there's kind of like this conference, a little bit of overload times. You think, I don't care what you got to say, let's go eat out here. Okay? So we try to think through and look, and we think, okay, here's areas of weakness, maybe like in evangelism. We want to work on that. And what can we do? So I don't know that well. I want to get before the Lord and just say, God, you know, what are you into? I am very excited about some of the summer, just having more time to pray and look to the Lord. Yes, and especially, but we do it more on team levels. See, it hadn't. Yeah, some party we turn over to them. Valentine's party, Secret Saints, they do the whole thing. Yeah, we do some things with students. I mean, we do planning with students. Like, we didn't know, it wasn't always big. I used to do it all with students because there wasn't anybody else to do it with. But we do some planning with students, and we get feedback from them. But, like I say, I think the larger staff gets, then the more talking we do, because we have to correlate that. When are you going to have your retreat? When are you going to do this and that? But we're all trying to stay in touch and get the feedback from students. But one of the better things to do is for you to plan. If the students aren't in on it, it's not theirs. Because I don't care how good a program you plan, if they don't have anything to do with it over a period of time, they're not that excited about it.